All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome here. I think we're going to get started. Our talk today is essentially just our story with lessons that we've learned along the way. We are certainly not positioning ourselves as experts or like we have it together. Our marriage is not perfect. And, you know, if you're looking for that, you're going to be disappointed. But we recognize that also we're speaking to a culture that is dealing with what I've heard is called an epidemic of loneliness. You know, whether it's COVID or culture, technology, these kinds of things, I think so many of us are feeling isolated. And I think relationships is a really great, like, felt need of our generation. I'm going to turn my phone ringer off.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. We are also approaching this talk, you know, under the lens of the good news of Jesus, that every season in our life, singleness, dating, marriage, can be used to build Christ-like character and can draw us closer into relationship with Jesus. And really, that's the goal of everything, of every season that we have. How can I know Jesus more intimately? How can I reflect his character more clearly as a single, while I'm dating, when I'm married? That is our goal throughout this talk and really throughout life.
So I want to reiterate that we're not professional speakers. We do not have published books about dating or marriage. We just happen to be, you know, people that met 18 years ago, and we happen to like each other after 18 years. And we just want to tell our Success. Story. So you guys don't want to hear us talk because we don't really have anything other than our story. But what we want to do is to actually get through our conversation, like kind of what our story is like, things that we've learned over the last 18 years. And then we want you guys to ask us questions. It could go really well, or we'll see how it goes, right, guys? So there's a QR code. I think you guys know how to use it. Ask questions there, and after we go through our talk as fast as possible, we'll answer your questions. So what we're going to do is we're going to just talk quickly about our background so that you guys know that we're not completely crazy. And then after that, we'll kind of go through a little bit of our thoughts in singleness, and then on dating, then on marriage. And then after that, we'll just go straight into question and answers. Is that good? All right, perfect. So
all right.
Jeanette, you start.
Okay, Jeanette, Ethan. We are living in Oakville. We have two kids. Our daughter is 15, our son is 12. We've been married for 17 and a half years, together for just over 18. Personally, I started our marriage working in full-time ministry and then was home with kids for some years. While working on getting recertified for nursing, and now have moved more into the philanthropy and generosity space as a career-wise.
And I'm also married to this person. I also live in Oakville, and I also have two kids. And kind of my 9-to-5, I guess, I've been an entrepreneur and a fund manager for the last 15 years.
So I grew up in a small town in a Christian bubble where getting married young was the only option. I had people at my 10-year high school reunion who had no kids when we graduated high school and 7 kids 10 years later. At 28 years old, I was considered an old, you know, kind of an old maid in that crowd. And it was challenging. When I went home, I felt people, you know, kind of curious, like, what's wrong with her? I had, in my singleness, though, I also had what I felt like was such a full life. After high school, I went to Europe to be a nanny, went to Bible school there, traveled a bunch, came back to university, had that full experience. After university, felt a calling to go to China for a couple years, did that, ended up back in Toronto on campuses in Toronto, and then started working for a church, which is where Ethan and I met. I had options, sort of an option out of high school to get
options.
Married, really. An option.
Thank you. She had options.
Other than you.
Great.
But, you know, I think back to the mistake that would have been and how much I would have missed in that time. I think our culture right now is so focused on, you know, who I'm looking for, talking about the other person, about what I deserve, the kind of person I'm looking for having high standards. There's memes about, you know, I won't settle for anything but a 10. But in that time of life for me, when I needed that independence to really grow and develop as a person, to experience so much of life and the world that I wouldn't otherwise have, I feel like God was doing something deeper in me and building in me something, growth, personal development, closer walk with Him, character, maturity, life experiences that made me more of a person who was ready to be married. And I think our culture is looking at what can I get versus in that singleness, who can I become, right? And I think if you are in a season of singleness right now, that's the question that you need to be asking. What is this season for? Why am I here? How can I become a 10? How can I make myself marryable to a 10? You know, like, do I have those same standards for myself that I'm looking for in other people? And using this gift of time to really focus on personal development, your spiritual growth, your social life, your depth of character.
So for my story, my kids who are 15 and 12 kind of say that I'm a loser, because it's actually true. Because I'm one for one. So I dated for the first time Jeanette. I married her. So I actually didn't date around. So I think
it's 100% success rate.
100% success rate. And my daughter basically laughs at me. But it's okay. It doesn't hurt my feelings. I remember kind of thinking and hearing about, hey, don't think about who you should have, you know, or who you should marry, but rather think about being the person worth marrying. But as I'm doing that, right, I had lots of questions about that, right? When I was single, when I was hanging out with my friends, we talked a lot about, hey, like, this person is right, this person's not right. I think I had lists of the ideal person who I should marry, who I want to marry. And I don't know about, like, you guys now, but when I was with my friends, like, talking about, you know, who I want to date or what kind of person I want to date was part of my everyday conversation. But I think when you are thinking about it in your, you know, in your teens and your 20s, we do think about the future a lot. Like, what do we want? Who do we marry? What kind of job do I have? What am I going to be like? And how many kids am I going to have? All those kind of questions. And inevitably, despite the fact that we want to be the person worth marrying, we do think about the person and what kind of person we want to marry. And the first thing that I want to say is to that, like, who you are right now and who you are going to be in 15 years from now, 10 years from now, it's going to change. When I was, you know, in my early 20s, I was pretty sure that I was going to be static once I get married. You know, and those 40-year-olds and 35-year-olds, they're really boring because they figure their life out and they don't change. And because of that, my ideal type in my 20s doesn't look really like Jeanette. You know, like in my teens, I didn't really care about sports. In my teens, I cared a lot more about music. I was part of a cool crowd, like in the orchestra and stuff. So I was like, okay, this is really important. My wife better be able to play the violin, was kind of what I used to say.
Cannot.
But if I look back as a 43-year-old right now, and I look back at my last 20 years, I look very different. I'm a very different person. So kind of my kind of takeaway from my singleness experience is, don't think about the person that they are when you're thinking about and discerning who you want to date and who you want to marry. It's looking for someone who you can journey with. Is this the person? Is this person someone that I can journey together with for the rest of my life? I know I'm going to change. I know she's going to change. But can we actually handle all the changes together? Am I willing to be flexible with the other person? Am I going to be able to grow together with the person that I'm dating right now?
Yeah, so we started dating in January of 2008. I'm dating ourselves.
2008.
Yeah. And pretty quickly it became serious. Our first fight actually was about the fact that we're really different people. And we had a fight because in our early months, weeks of dating, we would go from social event to social event, just like nonstop. And I'm very introverted. He's quite extroverted. And we couldn't figure out how to mesh our two social worlds together in a way that worked for both of us. And so our fight was about like, I'm exhausted, man. I need to go home and be alone. And you got to leave me alone. But
and why do you not like people?
But what we kind of like learned a little bit from that was there's all kinds of different elements to our lives, right? Physical, emotional, social, spiritual. And as we are dating and growing close together, those things need to grow in balance together. And when you're in a relationship, you know, probably the physical part and the emotional part, they naturally move fast on its own. Those things need maybe some boundaries around them. But there's other parts of our lives, the spiritual life, the social life, different things like that, that we need to learn how to grow in them together and balance those parts out.
Are you like, and by the way, when we talk about the spiritual part, we're not talking about like fasting and praying and doing Bible studies together.
No, that's important too, but it's like how do we have conversations about what God is teaching us? How do we learn from other people? How do we, I don't know, what would you say about that?
Like when we are dealing with issues, can we actually deal through it in the lens of Jesus? Or are we just going to kind of keep that in our hearts and not talk about it?
Yeah.
Like we need to be growing together in the image of Jesus rather than just having a relationship and putting Jesus on the side.
And do I resonate with the way that he relates to God, right? And do I learn from him in his spiritual walk and him from me as well?
So grow physically, emotionally, socially, and spiritually. And I'll just talk to the guys. Like, we are physical beings, right? So that is a very important part. So it'd be probably important for you to put some boundaries together because you'd probably rather be, you know, hanging out and just, you know, cuddle. I don't know. I don't want to go into all the details, I guess. you kind of want to, you probably prefer to do that. So you probably want to focus more on talking about spiritual aspect. And
being social together, like how do they relate to their peer group? How do they relate to their family? What can I learn from them? Do I enjoy them in a group? Do we have common friends? What are their friends saying about them to me? Like that's a social side of your relationship that needs to grow and exist. Yeah.
So I'll ad lib here for a sec and talk about one time when Jeanette and I are dating, and one of the more important parts for me was that when Jeanette and I are together and she's with my friends, that I don't feel like I have to manage her. That was like something that I really cared about. Like, can I go to a hangout, a party, or like a work thing? And am I going to be proud and not think about like, oh my gosh, Jeanette's talking to that guy she better know how to handle that guy? Or do I feel complete freedom to trust her and be proud to have her there? Like, that was one of my like huge important part to it. She succeeded.
I can work a room.
She can work a room. But that was an important test. So like just learning all that kind of part, because it's not just about physical and emotional intimacy. It becomes holistic as you get married and you discern who you're marrying. Okay, second point. Okay, so let's go back to like the first date, right? If you guys remember the first date, like we spent hours in the bathroom and in our closets trying to make sure that we look really good, right? You're probably like taking pictures of what you're going to wear and ask your friends. You're probably doing your hair for the millionth time. Our desire on our first date is to present ourselves as best as possible. That is what we do. And that's fine. That's not wrong. But part of our kind of being in the relationship, see, the first part, we do want to be loved because we do want to show off and present ourselves in the best case possible. But let me ask you guys, how do you know that you're getting closer with Jesus? How do you know that you're getting closer to God? Because if I understand God correctly, he knows everything about us. He knows our worst selves. And part of us getting closer to God is knowing that we are so unlovable, but God loves us so much. And we see the greatness of how the cross has really saved us. And that's the same thing. As we're in a relationship, I always ask, like, when Jeanette and I meet a bunch of, like, you know, early dating couples, I kind of look at them. I look at the girl, I look at the guy, I look back at the girl and say, have you farted in front of them? And yeah, a lot of that is that laughter, right? Oh my gosh, I can't believe Ethan's talking about farts. But that does kind of mean it, right? Like, if you think about marriage, you know, we do talk about in sickness and in health. We do talk about being a partner for the rest of your life. And you want to be in a situation where you are loved when your reality is so bad and so sinful and
so stinky.
part of your growing in your relationship with one another is being comfortable in your skin, knowing that the other person has seen the worst of you. And can you actually work through that? So part of, you know, dating for me was actually like not worrying so much about putting the best projection of who I want to be seen as, but allowing Jeanette to see me for who I am and seeing this reality of who I am and allowing myself to know that she loved me in spite of all of that. So if you guys are in a relationship, newish, do not just cause yourself to fart in front of the other person. But that is a good test, right? Are you feeling comfortable enough that you can show yourself? You can show the worst of yourself? Because if not, marriage is not going to work very well.
How do you follow that? Okay. So yeah, we started dating in January. Like I said, it went pretty quickly. By June, we were engaged. And during that engagement, we got married in October, so it was not long.
That was like the craziest 3 months of our lives.
Yeah, we both changed jobs, we moved twice, we did a reno, and we navigated the joys of being an interracial couple with our families.
Don't ask questions about that, by the way.
Just make sure certain people aren't here. Yeah, so it was a very, very full time. And what I would say about engagement is, you know, obviously there's still an out clause in engagement. You know, you're not 100% decided. Decisions can still be made that this isn't right. But as you're engaged, you are working towards marriage. And the closer you get, the more your eyes should be closed. Your eyes are wide open when dating and closed tight when married. When we were dating, I was looking at Ethan's weakness. I was looking at how
weaknesses,
yeah. Looking at how others looked at him, you know, trying to discern, is he the right person? But when we're married or when we're getting closer to that, that's actually no longer applicable. Your eyes are shut to other people. And I would say your eyes are essentially on the hunt for the good, because what you look for, you will find. So now that I am married, this is especially applicable, because if I'm out there looking for weakness, things that he's doing wrong, you know, ways that he's failed me, let's say, I will find it. He's human. But if I am out there looking for the good, his character, things that I appreciate about him, ways that he serves me, I will find that. And the thing about that is that whatever you think about turns into your feelings, which then turns into your actions. So if I'm thinking loving thoughts about him, I will feel love towards him and I will act lovingly towards him. Guess what happens when someone is acted lovingly towards? They respond in love. If I am looking for weakness and negative and critical things, I will think those thoughts. I will feel that way towards him and I will act critical and negative. And guess what happens when someone is acted that way towards? They respond with negative and critical towards you. And so the circle kind of continues. And I would say that started out when we were engaged, but certainly is very applicable to marriage. So I think women especially, well, maybe not especially, but I'll just speak to women. When we get together, we often will talk about our guys in not the best light, perhaps, especially maybe if you're married, you know this, that women can be critical and it can turn into a bit of a complain fest. And I would just say, don't. That's it. I mean, there's just don't complain about your spouse. There's just no reason to do that. There's, you know, there's counseling, there's deep friendships, but that's different than complaining. And I think the training that you need to do is a training of your own mind to look for the good in someone and to even change the way you feel and think about them. It is possible.
Should we go to marriage?
I guess so.
All right.
Like I said, engagement was quick. It all was quick.
It was all quick.
Yeah.
The marriage then.
Now it's long. Long. Yeah.
All right. So we got married in October in 2008. And for 17 and a half years, we've been married. We had kids, all these kind of stuff. So I have one rule to make marriage successful. Guys, marriage is extremely simple. It's not hard. You just have to follow one rule and that's it. And that rule is to think and work only for the interests of the other person. That's it. So if you're completely selfless, and if you don't think about your own agenda, but the other person's agenda, and put that at the highest regard for the rest of your life, until death do you part, then you will have an amazing, perfect marriage. Now, that's really hard to do. That is actually impossible to do. But it goes back to the same. And if both people are doing this, if Jeanette looks after the interest of mine, and she only looks after my interest, and if I only look after Jeanette's interest and that only, then it becomes a perfect marriage.
Both people are taken care of.
Both people are very much taken care of. Are you reading my stuff? Okay. Okay, so in order for you to look after the other person's interest and do that only, you need to do two things. One, we need to communicate what our interests and our needs are to the other person. You got to communicate. We are not mind readers. Sometimes I think both men and women assume that the other person should be a mind reader, and we complain because they don't read our minds, but we have to communicate that. Can't wait till heaven when we think of, we can like read each other's minds and we're one in spirit, but that's not the case, and we have to use words. Second is, yeah, to be completely selfless. And it's funny how God designed our life, because when I think as I been in a dating relationship and into a engagement relationship without marriage, I have never experienced and understood how selfish I am. And more and more I'm in this relationship, I realize, man, I'm so selfish. And that reflection helps me to know who I am and the fact that I'm loved despite the fact that I'm so selfish, and that God loves me despite the fact that I'm selfish. So that two things, going back, the communicating your interest and the needs to each other is a really hard thing. And I can talk about that from guys' perspective. I think we as guys, or I as a guy, think so much about what I think Jeanette might need. And we assume a lot of that, or I assumed a lot of that. So about 4 months into having a kid, so this is August 2010 is when Bailey was born. And in December 2010, I started a business that I'm still at right now. And just a side note, if you guys are thinking about starting a business, do not do it with being a brand new dad and you're adjusting to a new life. Do not do that. Bad idea. But as I was making the decision, I was pretty sure that I was doing Jeanette a favor. I'm like, well, you know, this is going to be financially really good. I assumed Jeanette would want me to, you know, provide for the family while we raise kids. I probably assumed a lot about what Jeanette may want in this life, right? And I made those decisions, and we probably discussed it.
We discussed it.
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure. We discussed it, but it was more of like me like wanting to do this, and I was looking for Jeanette's consent that I do it. And we didn't talk about what that entailed. I'm pretty sure that when you were a little bit concerned about it, I probably took that as an attack against my idea, right? Because we were very defensive of our idea. But the idea of like, I, Ethan, have a wonderful plan for Jeanette's life, and all she has to do is to follow it, is that exact example of not communicating your interests and needs to one another, because we assume a lot. And if I bet, like looking back, if Jeanette could pick, kind of going back to that December 2010 of starting a business, like she probably would have said, like, I'd rather you be less stressed than what you are now. and your health and your stress and your undying focus on starting this business, if you just lower that a little bit, that would be really good. If you're a little more invested in your in helping me out and being a parent rather than being a backup, be like being a coworker and being a parent together, that'd be really great. I'm sure she would have a feedback, but here I was trying to make a decision saying, you know what, this is a wonderful plan. I should do this. And Jeanette, you should kind of follow up because this is an amazing plan for us. So simple marriage is when you communicate your interest to one another and learning how to communicate that needs and interest and learning how to be selfless and constantly talking about that together, because that is key to amazing marriage.
We basically have two things that we say about marriage, that one. And then the other thing is celebrating your difference, that a team is better than two individuals. Ethan and I are really different people. He is an Enneagram 3, I'm a 9. He's an extrovert, I'm an introvert. He's driven and busy and determined. I'm slower paced, a conflict avoider, introspective. In pretty much every measure, we are opposites. And somehow we coasted through the first couple years of marriage, but we were gifted a very spicy child at birth in our first one. She has been a beautiful handful. And
I tried to get her to come today, but she didn't think that was a great idea for her to come listen to their parents talk about relationships, so she is not here.
Yeah, so the early part of marriage was like coasting, and then we hit parenting, yeah. And gosh, we hit some major bumps. It hit on everything we held dear, like independence and being in the center of things socially and like being available to people. It struck a chord with us. And we also realized how different our childhoods were. I mean, I guess we should have clued in earlier, but whenever. So we struggled and we wanted to approach this spicy child like really differently. And we kept seeing the other person's approach to parenting as wrong, or at least less than our way. Like, that's not how I would do it, was basically the main text running through my head when I would watch Ethan interact with her. And we thought about how we would parent, and we judged each other, resented each other about that. And I couldn't quite point to you a specific time when this happened, but somehow, probably miraculously and by the hand of God, we started to begin believing and acting as if our differences were our greatest strength. We can, you know, talk one day about parenting practices or whatever, but I remember putting our daughter in timeout, and I would approach her one way and I would need a break. And so I'd leave the room and Ethan would kind of go in and I would listen at what he was saying. And, you know, I couldn't wrap my head around how this was working, but we came to start believing like his way was good for her, as was my way. And she was benefiting from the combined team effort that we were putting in. And and we would eventually like tag each other back in, like high-fiving on the way into the room. Because we started to rejoice in how our approaches were opposite. And I think that's true of like, not just parenting, but all things in marriage. Like, we can choose to look at our differences as like less than, or we can choose to say, I'm so grateful that you are the way that you are, because I think together as a couple, we are stronger because of it. So we learned that through parenting a tough kid.
Yeah.
I'm still learning it.
Still learning.
Yeah. She's lovely. Don't worry.
Well, I can't wait to kind of think about how I grow and what our next, I'm 42, so 40, 50, 30 years of our lives left, right? But it's about that journey. It's about kind of living together and figuring out how we can learn from one another and how we can be more like Jesus as we grow in our lives. And guys, I'm gonna tell you, like, from where you are right now for the next, I don't know, fill in the blank, the rest of your life, like, you wanna journey that life that God is going to bless you with somebody that you can share with. And that sharing isn't just about, you know, just being a passenger, but having like a coworker, your best friend, like someone that you're intimate with, to intimately run that life together is the purpose of marriage. So like, we have like one closing thought. I wanted to speak, like, if I could say one thing to women in this room, what would I say? And Jeanette, what if one thing we could say to you could say to men? Mine would be, if I think I was thinking about this, that when I was young, a lot of men who I looked up to, when they were giving their like speeches, when they're talking about their life, they always talked about how alongside great men are a more, even more amazing women. And I didn't really understand what that meant when I was young. Like, yeah, but you're really smart. Like, you don't need to be married to somebody to make that happen. And I didn't really understand that until I met Jeanette and we spent the last 18 years together. Like, despite, again, I don't know about now, but despite what the, you know, society or what our culture may say, we as men are not as confident as we say or want to be portrayed as. And when I, despite the fact that from the secular world, the jobs that I have, I look confident, I look like I know what I'm doing, I struggle in imposter syndrome. I will always struggle in imposter syndrome. And being coming back home and talking to Jeanette and being able to receive that support and confidence from my spouse, like that's been one of the greatest reasons why I got to live last 17 years with the confidence that I probably don't have myself. But if you think about like the belief, love, and support that Jeanette had for me, I'm better because of that. And that imposter syndrome would be insurmountably difficult if I was also getting berated at home and if I felt like I wasn't respected by Jeanette. So if I can give you one advice about marriage to women, I would say respect. You want to respect the men that you are married to. And that source of energy, the source of confidence is something that I think I didn't know that I needed until I got married and living next to Jeanette for the last 18 years.
And I'm supposed to speak to men. I'm not sure if I have anything great, but I do have a lot of compassion for you right now. I think our culture's really dealing men a tough hand. And I think it's hard to be a guy right now and to figure out what that looks like or how to lead or how to, yeah, anyways. But the one thing I would also add is that women interpret love, I think, as being truly heard and seen. So a woman really needs that from you. Don't assume that you know about your partner. Be curious about them. Learn them even when you've been together for 20 years. Find out, you know, how do they interpret that now versus how they interpreted that 10 years ago? I don't know. Like, continue to be curious about them and about their life and who they are and what makes their heart beat, and truly listen to them. That is really what I think, well, I'll speak for myself as a woman, that is how I see and feel loved. I think we're done.
We're done. We received 16 questions. I'm reading them.
Ethan made an app that...
I'm a nerd.
Yeah. puts all these questions together.
So I'm gonna start reading some of these questions. But if you guys have more, please send it in because I'm worried about some of these questions. So I'm gonna wish me luck. All right. First question. How do you know that you're ready for marriage?
Okay. There's a few questions like this. So like what timelines and readiness criteria? This is how AI shaped the question.
Is 6 months enough for courtship? Okay. You can answer that.
What is the approximate time frame? I'm sort of taking it in still. Yeah. How long should it take for someone to start dating? Okay. There is no script. There's no formula. For us, I think it was really short because for a lot of reasons. We knew people in similar circles. We had known each other like before we started dating, though we didn't really, you know, hang out in circles. I was older. He was still younger, but you know, there were different factors that helped contribute to that. But I think so timeline, like there's not a formula, like you need to be together for X amount of time to really know, but it's questions like, am I learning to see weakness and am I okay with that? Do they love me for who I really am versus what I'm portraying as my best self? Have I seen them in lots of situations? I think in our short dating period, we encountered a lot of life in that crunched in time together, like we said. And so we had the opportunity to quickly see how each other was responding to stress, to hardship, to family problems, to and then making decisions together and being able to move forward. So life kind of crunched down in a short amount of time, and we were able to experience that. Some people maybe date for 5 years and life just kind of tickety-boos all the way along, and you don't really have those kinds of intensities or crises, so you can't see that. So yeah, there's no time frame that's right. But I think it's just like learning and growing together. I hope this is okay to say. So yeah, when I was young, I had an offer of marriage. Yeah.
Offer of marriage.
Okay. You know this.
Okay. Offer of marriage. We're having a lot of fun, by the way. So if you guys are having fun too.
So yeah, so like I said, you know, small Christian bubble, small town. And it was certainly the expectation that I would follow through on that. And everybody in my circle, parents included, were saying, this is the right thing. This was the expectation to do. And everything from the outside looked fine and looked like it should work. But there was just something in my gut that said, no, like I can't do this. And I still couldn't tell you really what that was. Like objectively, that person was fine. It would have been fine. I mean, I would have missed out on all kinds of life, but there was something in me that said no. And I had to listen to, you know, like listen to the spirit, listen to my own sense of self and make a courageous decision. What felt like a very courageous decision to go against the cultural norm and everybody's expectation and end that. And yeah, it's, I hate that old adage, like you just know when you know.
Yeah, I hate that.
But you kind of do.
Yeah.
I don't know. But as long as you have the like wisdom around you, right? You're listening to the Holy Spirit. You're asking for wisdom and you're listening to yourself and you've got your eyes wide open while dating. I think you can arrive at you just know.
Yeah, I'll add a couple of things. I think you can be dating for 10 years and if your life isn't like if you're not engaging and making decisions together or going through like what the curveballs that life throws at you, then that 10 years is like a low impact 10 years, right? But if you go through like situations where you're like, oh, like we're making decisions together, we have to grow spiritually because we have to talk about it. I'm not like saying like it has to be crisis, but if you're not able to answer like, is this a person that I want to journey with? If this person I want to travel with in this life thing, if you haven't had enough experiences to answer that, then I wouldn't try to create it. But you kind of want to think about that. So if you're not able to answer that question, I think you're missing out on discerning. Second is I'll specifically talk about like financially, because I know I've heard, and this isn't a new thing. This has been around for probably long, long time. Like this whole idea that you have to be financially successful or financially there to start a family or get married. I think that's wrong, personally. Again, it goes back to the whole like best self. Like, why do you have to have a stable job? Is that because you can't see your own worth? Is that because you don't think you're lovable? Like, is it because you think it's hard? Struggling alone versus struggling together, guys, struggling together is way more fun than struggling alone. So I don't know why you would want to struggle alone because you have this ego where you have to make yourself like good enough financially to get married. Like when Jeanette and I, you know, when I started that business, I did not tell Jeanette, and I probably hurt myself more than I needed to, but we were really poor. Like I was maxing out our line of credit to make our ends meet, to make these things happen. So I would go against this whole idea like, oh, I need to be financially stable to get married. Trust me, marriage is expensive, but so, and having kids are expensive. Totally understand that today. But again, you don't need to be presentable good enough financially to be dating and get married.
This question has a little bit of nuance that I kind of want to address.
Sure.
Is that okay? says, when I have the conviction this person is the right person after prayer, but during the courtship journey, I see some kind of red flags, what do I do? Great question. I think you're saying that you know this person is the right person, but there's trouble, there's problems. Red flags, orange flags, I don't know. And I'm not going to speak, you should marry that person, I don't know. But, you know, I think your response to people, again, is like you're seeing their weakness and you're seeing what they do with their weakness. Because you're not finding someone without red flags. There's just, we all have red flags. Let me just disclaimer that with, like, I'm not talking about abusive situations or anything toxic or anything like that, but I'm just talking about you're seeing weakness in somebody that you don't love. I think what your response is you address it, you open up the conversation, and you observe what is their response to it. Are they repentant? Are they defensive? How does that look like when I bring up something that's hard to talk about? How do they respond? Because what you want to see in someone is not perfection, but you want to see repentance and humility to address the weakness. No one will come without some sort of orange flag. Again, disclaimer about toxic abuse, that kind of stuff, right? Sorry, go ahead.
That's great.
Oh, thanks.
I have nothing to add with this one.
We've addressed that one, yeah. No.
No? Okay.
Go ahead. You get to start with this one.
Oh, gosh. All right. Okay, we have four very similar questions. What does Christian teaching say about premarital sex, repentance, living together before marriage? If our desire to be with each other is healthy within God, is it okay to live together? All of that. Janai, you can start.
All right. Well, I'm going to stand here and take the maybe not so popular route that says that I do believe that the Bible is clear that sex is for within marriage. And I know that's not popular, and I know it's really hard. And I know that we make mistakes. But I also know a God who forgives and loves and gives a new start, fresh start, completely forgotten as far as the East is from the West. So I want to bring to you forgiveness and love and freedom if that has been your scenario. But I do think that God has presented us with the best option, which is that sex remains within marriage, before marriage and during marriage. And that when that happens between two people, there's freedom, there's beauty, and there is no, I don't know. Yeah, there's freedom. You add.
Yeah, I would second that. Not talking about people who, like, you know, like, had sex, and what do we do? That, I think I agree with you, Jeanette, on all that. Like, I think God can forgive you, and that doesn't mean that you have to break up. You know, there is forgiveness. That's why I kept going back, and when we were thinking about the physical, the emotional, social, and spiritual part, that physical part's hard. I have a few friends who dated for a few years and had sex before marriage and had kids before they get married. These things happen. I know it's shameful. It can be embarrassing, but I think God is God who forgives beyond that. But I'll speak to people who are thinking about getting together and living together and thinking about having sex. Like, why? That'd be my question. Yes, like, it's, you know, yes, we all get horny, if that's what you guys want to go to. Sorry, Jeanette, embarrassing. I get it. I understand. But, like, why? Like, the question is, like, okay, for those of you who are like, I want to live together, we won't have sex. I'm like, well, like, I mean, it'd be like, if I'm trying to lose weight, I'm not going to go to a pub and, you know, I'm not going to try get myself in a place. I wouldn't do that. Guys, like, sex is such a sacred, intimate thing. It's worth it to wait. And I think it implicates both the guy and the girl in preserving something that is so sacred that it's beautiful when you wait till marriage. And God made it to be that way. And that connection that you have, it's fun, it's great. It's a great thing to kind of wait and wait for until you get married. So I would just urge you guys to wait, despite the fact I know how hard it is. But I wouldn't chase getting married because you want to have sex. Try to find the right person, and sex is a byproduct of being together with someone. But I would urge you guys not to fall to that. It's hurtful after, and it's hard. And if you end up not marrying them, there's a lot of implications. So I would wait that until, and it's a great thing to share when you find the right person.
Yeah, and nothing is beyond redemption. Like, we don't believe that at all. So whatever you come with, come to the cross, and Jesus brings newness to it all. I think the culture also talks about, like, well, I need to know if we're a good fit sexually. Mm-hmm. It's garbage. You will be if you're married. That's it.
All right, next question.
You go.
How do you define the difference between platonic love and romantic love? How did you know you were in love? Were you able to identify the shift from like to love? Do you want me to go first on this?
Sure. I don't know what you're going to say, but
I don't
sure.
know either.
Is attraction fundamental to a relationship? I think so, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You need to be physically attracted to someone. There needs to be some chemistry there. It is a part of your life. You are a holistic being with physical as part of it. So yeah, physical attraction needs to be there. Yeah.
I think some of us do fall into this over-spiritualization, like physical attraction must be sinful, and I should only love their spiritual, how they know all these Bible verses. Like, what if you guys falling into that, I would say no. Like, I think you do need to look at the other person and say, wow, she's hot, he's hot. Like, you gotta be able to do that. Like, there has to be attraction. How do we define the difference between platonic love and romantic love? I mean, part of it is that.
Yeah.
Right? Part of it is that. Like, we were actually in the same friends group. So we weren't really at the beginning. I mean, the platonic love seems like a little strong. So
we weren't platonically in love.
We're well acquaintances.
Yes.
So we really didn't think of that. But it was actually some of our friends that were like, hey, have you thought about Jeanette? Have you thought about Ethan? And we're like, huh, that's an interesting thought. And we started seeing each other and
turns out, yep.
Yeah, it turned like, wow, I think she's really hot. So it did happen. So, and I think, this question, I think goes with the premise that we're really in touch with our emotions. At least for me, and I do not want to drag all the guys with me, but I didn't know. This is amazing. She's really cool. She's really hot. I like hanging out with her. I like spending time with her. And guys, sorry, I'm gonna let out a little secret. Like, we as guys can talk about all the types that we like and all that, but really, at the end of the day, any girl that gives us attention and wants to actually go out with us is that goes from a 3 to a 9, right? Let's be honest, right? So I was oblivious. I was oblivious when we were dating. And I'm like, wow, I really like her. And I wasn't even thinking about love. That was really deep. So I think just having fun, getting to know each other, that joy of actually trying to put up your best self and enjoying that process, I think that affection does happen. I think if you're questioning whether you are a platonic love versus romantic love, I would probably venture to guess, without being absolute, that it's probably more platonic love than romantic love, maybe.
Or if it's one-sided. Yeah. Romantic love is always two-sided. It doesn't work one way.
Yeah, that's a good point too. So yeah, if it's not two-way, then it probably doesn't work either. It actually doesn't work, yeah. How do you put aside initial attraction to build good friendships before it becomes anything else?
I don't think you need to put it aside. You could see someone here today. Huh? Huh? Look around, guys. This is going to be good. Put up your hand if you like.
Don't do that. That's a bad idea. You won't get invited back.
You could have initial attraction with someone, start dating them, and build a friendship while you're attracted. There's no put aside. There is that. But I think it goes back to that growing holistically, growing in all the areas. So, don't just emphasize the initial attraction, right? How are you growing spiritually? How are you growing emotionally, socially, mentally together? So it's not something that you do platonic first. You must do platonic first to have a good friendship. You can do them simultaneously, but just, you know, recognize that there's multifaceted. A relationship is multifaceted, and you need to work on all the things at the same time.
Love
yeah?
It. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
Couple more questions.
Which one?
This one. How do you handle your relationship while serving in the same ministry? And how do you not let your relationship with each other get in the way of your ministries? So we have some experience in this, so you can go first.
I don't know. I don't think it has to get in the way. I think some of our funnest times were when we've been doing ministry stuff together, like leading a small group together. And again, it goes back to that teamwork thing. I think we were having fun. We were, you know, we had this small group that we were leading while we were dating and engaged, and we would, you know, send everybody on their way and then clean up after and be like, oh, that was so cool. Did you hear what she said? And what do you think about that guy? And, you know, we just had so much to talk about as we were doing that together. So I don't think it has to get in the way. I'm not sure how to answer this.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I miss the days when Jeanette and I did ministry together.
We're starting to do it again.
Yeah.
We were in a season of, like, divide and conquer when the kids are little. Yeah. But now we get to do more stuff together again.
So, but I can see, like, timing-wise, right? If you're, like, so busy that you can't set time aside, maybe that's what you're saying, or there may be, like, confidential issues so you can't really talk about a big part of your life. Some of my favorite times were just serving with Jeanette and talking about it after. I think one of my favorite questions was as soon as, like, all the people left our small group and we closed the door, and I look at Jeanette and say, what did I do wrong? Because I need feedback. I don't know what I've done right or wrong. So we would have, like, hours of conversation about our conversations afterwards. Even today, you know, that some of my favorite times are when the kids are in bed and Jeanette and I are just hanging out and we're just talking about our days. You know, I prefer to listen because I don't want to talk about, like, rehash my entire day all the time. But we do talk about what happened, and that resyncing and being able to communicate what we got to experience and things that we've learned is some of the best ways for me to reflect on myself and what we've got to see. So
there may be an assumption here behind this question that perhaps, and forgive me if this is your question, and I don't want to paint you in a bad light, but perhaps the idea is that ministry is spiritual and this is not. And I would bump against that. I think all of life is spiritual. And I'm just thinking of the example of, you know, let's say a pastor who doesn't have time for his kids. His greatest ministry is his family first, right? And so if you're separating, well, this is my ministry. This is what God has called me to do. It's so serious, so spiritual, but you're a total absent whatever, or not kind in your relationship, or whatever it is, like, this is your ministry as well. So life is not divided into boxes where God is present here and he's not here. He is in all of life. And as you join together in relationship and you get closer or then married, like, that is your primary ministry. And out of that, just like out of your relationship with God overflows your marriage, and then out of your marriage and your walk with him and your walk with your spouse overflows your ministry. It's not getting in the way. It is flowing from. I hope that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, last question. And we'll see if there's anyone else on the floor.
No. No live questions.
No.
Talk to us privately.
Okay. Is there such thing as, like, God choosing your partners? Is it that you're compatible just with one person? Okay, you and I might have a different question.
Go ahead.
So I'm gonna say, if you're a believer, and if you are looking at Jesus and your desire to grow in Jesus, I personally don't believe in soulmate. I think if you're following Jesus, I think a person, two people should be able to actually be married
and live a happy life. I think there are some matches where it's easier, some matches that are more difficult. But I do think that if you're honoring God, and by extension, you should be honoring your spouse. So I do think that I'm not going to stand here and say, no, like there's no soulmate and God doesn't choose your spouse. That's not what I'm saying either. I think there are instances where God does choose the right person for you. But I don't necessarily believe in the soulmate. I don't see it personally. But Jeanette, you may disagree with me.
No, I mean, I think, you know, ours is a good compatible match. Could I have been compatibly matched with somebody else? Possibly. I don't know if there is a thing as soulmates either. Like, just like there's one person out there, and if I miss that person, I'm doomed. I don't think that's true.
No.
So.
Yeah, like that sounds so fatalistic. So we don't necessarily believe that. I'm glad that we see the same way.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
All right, one question, anyone other than?
Oh my gosh, you're doing it.
Why not?
No.
No one has any questions?
I think you should just.
All right. Yeah. So thanks, guys. I guess.
That's a bad idea. All right.
Do you want to pray? I'll just pray for us, and then you guys can go to your next lab. All Father, right. I just thank you so much for your beautiful gift in our life of other people, and particularly our partners and our spouses. And I just thank you for the way that you've designed that. We submit to your design and your intentions for what this looks like. Mm-hmm. And we just ask, Jesus, that you would grow us no matter where we are, whether we are single or dating, engaged or married. God, that we would look to you to be our source and to be our passion and our drive. We love you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day. Hi, guys.
I have a question for you.
Sure. I'll come down. I feel weird being up here.
Yeah. Okay.